This is Norm Holey from WFHB, and today I'm interviewing Professor Jeffrey Dukes. He's going to talk specifically about the release of their first review of issues in Indiana and broader.
One of the striking patterns that we see over time in Indiana is that temperature has been getting warmer in many seasons, not as much in summer recently as in other seasons, but there has been a low and steady increase in temperature, and that increase in temperature has picked up on average, over the last 50 years or so, it's been happening faster. At the same time, we also see changes in precipitation. So Indiana's gotten a lot wetter in general, and particularly, again, in the past 50 years or so, it's gotten quite a bit wetter.
Is this going to spread out evenly over the seasons, or is it going to be concentrated?
Well, what I've been talking about so far is changes in precipitation that we've already seen. And historically, increase in precipitation has been happening in every season, fastest in spring and summer. So spring and summer have gotten wetter at a faster rate than winter in particular. And in the future, we expect that pattern to continue. We expect to be getting quite a bit wetter, and particularly in the spring, and also potentially in the winter. But the models all basically suggest that in the future, our winters and springs are going to get wetter. And depending on the scenario, that could be something like 30% wetter by the end of the century. They're projecting a steady increase in our precipitation.
Now, is that primarily driven by the fact that the average atmospheric temperature is higher and therefore there's a higher moisture content in the atmosphere, or is it due to changing patterns of the jet stream?
Well, we didn't actually break that out, but my understanding from these model runs is largely from the increase in the temperature of the atmosphere. We didn't break that out specifically for the precipitation in Indiana in this report. That's the pattern that you see in general, because there's a little bit of both in there, I guess, but my understanding is that it's generally from the warmer temperatures and the fact that there's sort of abundant evapotranspiration happening in the region. So that is sort of loss of moisture from the land surface.
What will our winter look like in 2050?
Well, in 2050, we expect the winters to be substantially warmer, and that's going to reduce heating demand. It's going to lengthen the growing season as well. Basically, the first freeze will happen later in the year, in the fall, and the last freeze will happen earlier in the spring. We will have fewer heating degree days, so that's a measure of sort of how much energy you need to use to heat your buildings and heat your home. We expect that a lot more precipitation that falls in the state will come down as rain instead of snow. So, for instance, in central Indiana right now, about 22% of the precipitation that comes down in the colder months is snow. And in the future, that's going to be cut in half. It'll only be about 10 or 11%. And we'll have fewer snow days. So here we're counting snow days as being the days when there's 2 inches or more of snowfall, so actually substantial snowfall. Those days will be cut about in half, we think, by the middle of this century. So in central Indiana right now, there are about 6 days on average, or historically, I should say, there have been about 6 days on average when we've had more than 2 inches of snow per year. And in the future, we expect to only have about 3 of those days per year.
High temperatures, what are likely to expect?
The summer high temperatures are really some of the most startling changes in this report. So we're expecting that the whole year is going to get warmer. We expect that warming may be most intense in the late summer and early fall. And it's really dramatic when you look at something like the number of days per year that are going to be above 95 degrees. So we call those extremely hot days. And in central Indiana, historically, there have been about 4 of those extremely hot days per year. But by the mid-century, that is likely to be close to a month. So depending on the amount of greenhouse gases we emit, it could be something like 30 or even close to 40 days per year where it's higher, the high temperatures are above 95 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a really dramatic change in the number of really uncomfortable summer days that we're likely to see in this state. And at the same time, the highest temperatures of the year are expected to rise pretty dramatically as well. in the past, pretty much throughout the state, our hottest temperature of the year has been something like 97 degrees. I mean, it varies. It's a little more in the south, a little less in the north. Well, on average, the hottest day of the year will hit something like 97 degrees. And by mid-century, we expect that to be more like 105 degrees. And if you actually keep going, and if we end up releasing greenhouse gases on the sort of trajectory that we're on now, if we don't work really hard to sort of reduce the amount of greenhouse gases that we emit, then by the end of the century, we're likely to end up with the highest temperature of the year being around 110 degrees or more. That's, to me, just a really kind of shocking change. If you compare our projected summer climate under this high emissions scenario to another part of the country now, like what if you ask, what will Indiana feel like by the end of the century under this high emissions scenario? It'll feel like southern Texas feels today. It would be that sort of rainfall and temperature regime. That's the best analog to what we have today. So southern Texas is a pretty far cry from what we have now in summer. And I think if you asked anybody from southern Texas as to whether they'd rather have Indiana's summer climate or their summer climate, I think they'd pick Indiana. So that is a pretty shocking difference to me and something that's really worth paying attention to.
Where does solar and wind fit into the picture for Indiana from your stakeholders?
Well, so we're looking at the potential impact of climate change more than sort of the mitigating factors. So that's not as strong a component of our report as you might expect, I guess, since we're looking at impact. But I will say that we were very interested in understanding how things like the wind might change in the future and how the generation of wind might be affected by the changing climate here. And that's something that we're actually still working on because the type of downscaling that we did is not the appropriate type to get predictions of what the wind might look like in the future. So we're working on a sort of a different kind of analysis that will hopefully contribute to that. We are going to go on a trajectory that minimizes this climate change, then we need to figure out ways to shift large portions of our energy demand away from fossil fuels, any sort of energy generation that involves releasing carbon dioxide, and towards something that does not have that sort of climate impact. And wind and solar are two of the really rapidly growing energy sources that don't emit carbon dioxide, of course, and so they would presumably play a big role in avoiding and being able to avoid some of the most dramatic consequences that we're looking at in this assessment.
I know our listeners will be fascinated by what you've had to report to us. I've been speaking with Professor Jeffrey Dukes, head of the Climate Lab at Purdue. Thank you very much for your contribution.
Thanks very much for having me.